This is the Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. Terrence Winch is here with us. He has a new book, and he's going to read an opening poem.
Thanks, Grace. I'll read the title poem from the book, That Ship Has Sailed. I'll read the expurgated version. In our old life, we ate ice cream and bread pudding. We drank glass after glass of Grand Marnier until it made us sick. Our libido was as big as a billboard. Our libido was larger than a drive-in theater screen in the middle of nowhere, playing endless adolescent pornographic classics. We had an appetite for appetite. We poured melted lard all over our popcorn, which we then covered with a snowstorm of salt. We smoked, we snorted, we cavorted with people who were best left alone. We talked all effing night on the phone. We read Keats and Yeats and all of the greats day and night. We got into fights in pubs. We drank 16 cups of coffee every day. We called in sick and spent the day in mysteries, doubts, uncertainties. We shirked our responsibilities without a second thought. We ate Chinese food and pizza for breakfast. We rode the bus to visit friends wherever they might be. We stole books. We cheated. We lied. We cried. We danced all night in the living room around the Christmas tree. In our new life, we try to remember the names of the people we think we might have slept with. We haul the bags of frozen broccoli out of the freezer. We light a candle to commemorate crossing the great divide between the green island of the young and the songs in our bones that have come unsung.
Oh, Terrence Winch, what's the name of the book?
That Ship Has Sailed.
Terrence, is it an Ars Poetica or is it an autobiography or are they both the same thing?
This particular poem?
That book.
Oh, the book. Well, the book, you know, there's always a lot of autobiographical, you know, material, I think, directly or indirectly, that works its way into most of our poems.
Most of your poems. You know, I've told you this before, but I laugh and I cry at the same time. Does everyone tell you that? I mean, there is so much humor and so many tears. Here's what I think. I think that each of your poems ache. And I cannot say that about many poets. Do you feel that ache when you're writing it?
Yeah, I think that has been said to me before.
I beg your pardon.
You know, I think that it's the only response to the human condition that makes any sense, that you have to bring a sense of humor to it. At the same time, you have to recognize that our mortality imposes on us a kind of ongoing subterranean terror.
Subterranean terror. There's so many thoughts in each of your poem beyond language. And I always wondered, you know, is there such a thing as a stand-up philosopher? That's what you are. You're a stand-up philosopher. How long did it take you to write these thoughts, these many thoughts? How long did it take to write this book?
Well, I write very quickly, typically. I generally write poems, you know, in one fell swoop. So for certain kinds of poems, like, you know, if I'm villanelles in particular, which I enjoy writing, they, for me, typically involve, you know, getting two good lines with two good end rhymes and then filling in the structure of the, whatever it is, 17 lines or 19 lines, I can't remember, and then letting the poem reveal itself over time, you know, coming up with other lines to fill in the rest of the spaces. But for most of my regular poems, they come out pretty quickly. And then I'll go back and tinker with them and rewrite things.
Is being a musician helpful?
You know, I think it probably is. I mean, it certainly has given me a lot of subject matter. You know, I mean, I have one book of prose stories that's all about being in a band, basically. And I have one book that's all about my life in Irish music, book of poems. And so it's given me a lot of good subject matter, plus references to music and to songs and all of that come into play a lot in my poems.
Well, since this book came out when it did, I fantasized that it was a safety valve writing when you were doing your novel, Seeing Eye Boy, because I know that when I'm writing one thing, I have another spiral notebook here, and that safety valve is almost better than the original. So do you think you were doing this simultaneously with the novel?
No, because actually the novel, that's a whole separate saga, the novel. Mm-hmm.
Do you want to give us a saga in one minute?
I wrote it like really probably close to 20 years ago. And I got an agent who really liked it. He pitched it to 5 major publishing houses, each one of which seemed to be on the verge of signing it and then didn't. And then he wanted me to rewrite it. And anyway, I just put it in a drawer for, 10 years or something. And then this old friend of mine, Tom Davis, called or emailed me one day in 2020 or 2019 and said, hey, what happened to that kid's book you were writing, that young adult book? And if it hasn't been published, I'd like to publish it. I thought, great. So
that
I said,
is good.
It's just a small press in Wisconsin, but I was delighted to have it come out.
Small press, big book.
Yeah.
Really,
yeah.
A very fine book, Seeing Eye Boy.
I love that book.
And for old people too.
Yeah. No, I that book for me was my attempt to put readers inside the Irish urban immigrant world of the mid-20th century. And I don't think there's no other book that I know of that does that. And I really wanted to put people in that universe, which is now gone, of course. And it was disappointing to me that it didn't get a wider audience, because I think it's a really, it's one of my favorites.
it's a masterwork, and we still have tomorrow, Terrence. That's what I feel about books. We always have tomorrow.
Yeah, that's right.
Not going anywhere. Let's hear another poem. And I will tell everyone that Terrence Winch has also several other books of poems. Let's see, 8. You have 8 books of poetry collections. And
9 with this.
And 9 with this beloved book. And the winner of many things, I'm just going to say 2 now, the American Book Award and the Columbia Book Award. And I'll keep peppering his awards throughout the program. So take us more, please. Terrence Winch.
Okay, I'll read a poem that doesn't really have much humor in it. It's called Survivor, in memoriam for Dennis O'Toole, 1946 to 1951. This is an incident that affected me for life, that happened when I was 5. And Dennis was my best friend. I imagine you are just now settling down for the night, your bed white as mayonnaise, which some people apparently prefer to ketchup or even mustard. I don't know what you would have liked, but I pretend that you are exactly like me, that you have lived on inside my body, my psyche, and have done so since that day you died. I see you as you start to drift off up there amid the clouds, shaped like clusters of forbidden fruit, dressed in your flower-white communion suit and short pants, never to be seen again, never to attend the Friday night dance at St. Helena's, never to get drunk with me on blackberry brandy in the boys' bathroom, your absence looming over the history of the world as I've known it. It couldn't be prevented. The sudden rip that took you on your trip to the beyond, while I stayed right here, forever wondering what hit you on the street that summer day, but failed to take me away as well. I am bereft of you. I am all now that is left of you.
Mm. I am all now that is left of you. Some poems are elegiac, and what gets me over and over again is the Catholic and the Irish imagery, the indentation that your life has made, the culture that you are memorializing, that, as you say, is gone. But these indentations in your life just penetrate the reader. It's unending material. Can you ever, ever get over your past?
Well, you are your past, There's no getting, there's
good
no
answer.
Getting over it. Yeah, I mean, the past is, I've written a lot about the past, actually, because it's a country I'm very familiar with and visit all the time, and it is what makes us who we are.
Why does it hurt so much? Why does your past hurt me so much? Well, why is it? Is it because it's gone?
That's part of it for me. I mean, the fact that it's gone, but also I think for me, my past did involve this strange admixture of joy and sorrow. I mean, you know, I came from a pretty happy family. Mm-hmm. My parents were terrific people. That world that I grew up in was this very tight-knit, like Irish immigrant world that had a lot of pleasures to it and joys to it. Mm. At the same time, you know, that poem that I just read, that recounts an incident when I was five where I was almost hit by the same truck that killed my best friend. We were running across the street. And I think I was traumatized by that in ways that I didn't even realize until later in life, that it was kind of a PTSD thing.
That makes beautiful art, makes art.
Yeah. And then, you know, when I was 13, my mother got sick and she died when I was 16. And then the neighborhood kind of, the Irish really reached their peak as an immigrant force around 1920. And Irish immigration continues to around 1960. But then with the, you know, and actually the election of JFK is sort of emblematic of the change that happens in the Irish world. The Irish become middle class. They start moving out of the urban neighborhoods that they were in for so long. So all of a sudden, in a very short period of time, my neighborhood just ceased to exist as this little Irish immigrant world. So yeah, there was a lot of loss and a lot of joy mixed in with my memories.
Nothing has ceased to exist in our world now because of you and your music as well. Keeping the tradition. But this work of yours, this new book, is to me, as I say, it's my favorite book of yours today, just because the latest one is always my favorite. But it is a combination of the tears and the joy. Just as a little boy, were you just bursting with creativity and just your lid was popping off with ideas all the time?
No, I don't know. I don't remember.
Oh, okay.
You know, I wasn't a reader. I don't remember books. I'm the youngest of five. I've asked my siblings about this, and I can't really get much of an answer. But I don't really remember reading. I think Swiss Family Robinson was the first book I read, and I was probably like, I don't know, 10 or something.
20.
I read all my oldest brother's Zane Grey novels. But it wasn't until after my mother died and I failed to make the JV and as a sophomore in high school that I just became an obsessive reader. I just started reading like constantly.
But as a person, I know I never could sit still when I was little. And I think if there was medication at that time, they would have done it to me.
Yeah,
so there's something about you that I see you always in motion. But let's have some motion with some poetry from That Ship Has Sailed.
Okay.
Terrence Winch.
I'll read one that that's in the book. I've been writing a lot of poems that are consist of two-line stanzas, couplets. And this is one of them. These are, you know, the more kind of surreal strain in my work, or comes from that strain, called Great Sizzle. Pour me another one, please. I raked all the leaves in the rain, and now I'm sore. My primal fear involves living in a dark forest made up of half sentences and embryonic cabbages. I was frolicking with my fairy godmother the other night when we were suddenly seized by a chronic inflammation of unbelief. The old postage stamps are licked, the eggs are beaten. I look for redemption and comfort food and the second coming of Elvis. A line was forming outside the darkened auditorium last night just as the faithful began to chant, "The worst is yet to come." I focus on the flowers in the vase in the living room, stinking up the house, knowing sooner or later our source network will expose our files. There is no way to get your secret back from the secret stealer. The soul is mysterious, they tell me. Put it in front of a camera and it explodes.
Terrence Winch, this poem is a cautionary tale, as so many are. The old postage stamps are licked, the eggs are beaten, but your apocalypse is so hilarious. You know, Billy Collins used to talk about keeping humor and tragedy dancing on the head of a pin. But you don't seem to be juggling. You just there. That's just you.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just you. You're just talking yourself on the page.
Yeah.
You're not saying I'm going to balance this with this. And I think you're even you're unaware of the humor and the tragedy, I think, as you're writing, right?
You know, it varies from poem to poem. I mean, a poem like this is, you know, comes out of some mixture of dreams and religion and, you know, life as I experience it.
What are your dreams like, Terrence?
Well, they're mostly, actually, my dreams are mostly, you know, very mundane. You know, they usually involve looking for some place to pee.
That would be, we would not edit that out, but it's a little known fact about you. I might have a scoop here. Terrence, let's have another poem. Well, I tell everybody another thing about you, and that we talked about your young adult novel, Seeing Eye Boy, and there are two story collections called Contenders and That Special Place. What happened to them?
They're still around. Mm-hmm. Contenders is not around. Contenders is long out of print. That's a book of short stories that Storyline published in 1989.
Yeah. Can it come back? You can always reprint, you know.
Yeah, I don't. Well, if someone were interested in it, you know, I'd certainly be happy mm-hmm. to come back.
Keep your mind open to that. Things are happening now with Ingram and, you know, all these new publishing sources. People are going in and bringing out books that should not be forgotten.
Yeah, no, I'm very happy with that book. And it would have to be keyboarded because it was pre-word.
No, I know a typist.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the way it is.
And the other one, That Special Place, that's still in print. That's a hanging loose book. That's nonfiction stories. That's the one that focuses on my music life more than
Hanging Loose likes you. I think they're going to do something for you next year.
Yeah, they're bringing out a book of occasional love poems next year.
Oh, occasional love poems. How occasional is your love, Terrence?
Well, I have been writing these 10-line poems for like the last 30 years. There's one book of mine called Lit from Below that consists of just those 10-line poems. And they're more languagey, the books in that poems in that book. But I've continued writing these 10-liners because I love doing them. And so for every Valentine's Day, anniversary, and birthday, I do a collage and a poem for my wife, Susan Campbell. And those, of course, have accumulated over the years. So there's a book's worth of them now. And there's a few other dedicatees in there as well. So that's the book that they'll be doing next year.
Oh, will the collages be present in them?
No.
Oh, just the words.
No, yeah.
Just to go back to form for a minute, you talked about your couplets. And I have a theory, my very own theory, that couplets are a way of containing tumult. That like no other form, we go to couplets when we really want to keep the subtext, which the subtext is so big. We want to contain it.
That's interesting.
I think it's possible.
Yeah.
It's true because I made it up.
Yeah, yeah.
More poetry. Yeah. Terrence Winch is here. Let's have another poem.
All right, I'll do another two-liner couplet poem called You May Take One Giant Step. They told me as the blood ran down my leg how cute I looked in my short pants holding a ball. That was back in the old world in another century. Back when we buried the dead in coffee cans. The sun was silver lemon then, not egg yolk yellow, the way it is now. It would burn you so red, your mother could melt butter on your skin. You never learned to throw that ball. You clutched it in your hand and hoped it would never roll away. You were given ginger ale and toast to cut the fever. The mothers all stood on the sidewalk, blowing smoke, as the breeze made their skirts quiver. Time was more like background music than an instrument of destruction, ticking in bubble wrap and waiting to go off at any second. Everything rhymed in those days. There was a song for vacuuming and an opera for the story of the street. When the moment came to dry your tears and go back inside, the curtain fluttered out the window like a flag of surrender.
They say keep it real. And what makes your poetry real is the ginger ale and the toast. Which of us was not raised on that?
Right.
Ginger ale and the toast. And they were perfect cures. Cures in those days.
Sure, absolutely.
And that is why it is so precious to me that you preserve these images, because then it makes all of us hark back to our own time. And it is, I'm not saying that this works for a young generation. I've seen it happen. I've seen your work just adored by the young generation. But those of us who lived during those times, it really has a degree of depth that no one else can appreciate. No one else can appreciate. Coming up the steps with that ginger ale, this is what makes us cry. So,
well, the thing about that poem too is that it's kind of an ekphrastic poem. In that, there's a photograph of me at almost 3 years old with my leg bleeding, and I remember that. That's probably one of my earliest memories, if not my earliest one. I remember my two older sisters taking my picture when my leg was bleeding. I remember thinking, why are they taking my picture? Why aren't they helping me out here? My leg's bleeding.
It is an illustrated book because of that.
Yeah.
How many brothers and how many sisters?
Two brothers and two sisters. Mm-hmm. Just one brother and one sister left at this. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you say that one of your brothers helped you put on a gigantic festival yesterday in the Washington area.
Yeah, well, my brother Jesse is really one of the driving forces in the Irish music scene in this area, and has been for forever. And his wife, actually, Francesca, is also involved. So the two of them really kind of ran this whole convention. A lot of work. They leave for Ireland today.
Exhausted.
Yeah.
Do you want to say a word to people who are just coming new to you about Celtic Thunder?
Well, Celtic Thunder was a band that Jesse and I started in 1977. And we played until 1998 with me, at which point I took a quote-unquote extended leave of absence, and then kind of came back several years later. And so, you know, we've continued to play to this day, but our name was, shall we say, appropriated by an Irish corporation that puts on these TV shows on PBS, et cetera, called Celtic Thunder.
And then when did your son join the group?
Well, he's done some gigs with us for sure.
I saw him play with you.
Yeah, he's done some gigs with us, and he's certainly, you know, when he's around, he's great to have on hand as a fiddle player. He started playing, he's 33 now, he started playing when he was about 9, and he's quite good. You know, he's a really excellent musician. And
was
we're
there music
coming back
going
next year, and we're looking forward to it.
Were your parents musical?
Yeah, my father played the tenor banjo, and my parents both loved Irish music. They had a big collection of old 78s, which we still have some of. And I have my father's banjo right here, down here somewhere. So yeah, he really encouraged us all to play music, and loved it himself. And my mother, she didn't play anything, but she would sing as she was doing housework and that kind of thing. So
my father's banjo.
Yeah.
My father's banjo, my mother's singing while she did housework.
Yeah, absolutely.
There you go. That's Terrence. Let's have more.
This one is called JFK Assassinated. I'm on my way to the car, part of the carpool, going to school, and everybody else is standing in front of the open doors of their cars, bent over, their heads resting on their arms, listening to the news of the assassination. I think we cried. We went to school and prayed and cried. It snowed in April that year. That year, no one had yet committed any sex crimes. No one was a junkie. Only a few of us had already died. This was when men beat their wives and children, when men spent their days digging ditches, drinking quart bottles of Miller High Life, which was cold and golden. You could wear hats back then. You could go out very late at night and walk the streets, smoking cigarettes, looking for love. You could stay until the bars closed. You could sit on the stoop, blowing smoke at the sky, wondering what would happen, you know, in the future, which was like a far-off country you would never get to visit, but whose laws you were forced to obey.
Oh, why was that pivotal?
The assassination?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think, you know, it's funny, Dylan put out an album a year or two ago that had a, I think it was like a 17-minute song on JFK and the assassination. And I think, you know, anybody my age or older remembers that day, you know, very, very vividly. And of course, even more so if you were from the Irish-American world, because, you know, he was just a god. I saw him once when I was in high school, marching with my high school band in the Columbus Day Parade. And he came driving by in a convertible, waving to the crowd and stuff. And, you know, he seemed godlike. And we were just, I mean, it was a shattering event. It was just a overwhelmingly shattering event.
A symbol.
And, yeah. And that poem, I think around the time of the 50th anniversary in 2013, I wrote a number of things about JFK and about the assassination. This one was later, but, you know, it's the kind of thing that sticks in your mind. And I realized that there was a picture in my college yearbook of people streaming in and out of the little chapel on campus. It was a Catholic school, Iona College. And I'm one of the people. I think I'm coming out of the little chapel, and you can see me. And it's like, and, you know, I had just turned 18 that month. And, it's the kind of thing you still go back and think about. You know, you still go back and wonder what life in America would have been like if that hadn't happened. You know,
it was the end of an era for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
But you were 18 when that happened?
Yeah, I had just turned 18 and on November 1st.
Let us go on. Your poetry will live longer than we will. So let's have a final poem.
A final poem. Okay. All right, this is a poem called The Open Door, which in Irish is An Doras Os Cailte, and it's dedicated to a very dear friend, Jennifer O'Riordan, who was my Irish teacher for 3 years, and unfortunately she moved to Greece a few years ago. So this was a farewell poem I wrote for her, The Open Door. One day the trees will raise their arms up as you walk by, but that will just be me saying hello. If you hear music in the blue Aegean water urging itself towards the shore, that's a tune I'm working on for you called An Doras Os Cailte, or The Open Door. Those stones on the beach, I put them there for you to find, a way to keep me in mind. I will listen for you with the shell to my ear, hoping to hear you sing a song about love, loss, memory, forgetting, or maybe one about a fox, a duck, and a red rabbit. You are one habit I will never want to quit. I'll be by that door waiting for your visit.
The voice of Terrence Winch. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions. Post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making the program possible. Funding is provided by the Maron State Arts Council, the Sinipid Fund, Natalie Canivore, Rivada Foundation, and Sandy Jackson Cohen. Mike Turpin is our engineer. I'm Grace Cavalieri.